When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Anytime I was talking to people in the first month after I got out, it was almost like as the words were coming out of my mouth, it was almost like I was hearing it for the first time too. It wasn't almost like that. It was like that, which was like living in a psychological thriller. I was saying things that I had never blocked out. Like, it's not like these were repressed. I guess they were just suppressed. So what would happen is, you know, when I was saying these words out loud, it was hitting different inside of my body and eyes, like in a way I'd never experienced. I had gotten distance from what I now know to be called the pathological worldview. These words coming out of my mouth that would make both me and the person I was telling it to clasp their mouths and burst into tears at the same time as me, because these are things and words, again, that I didn't black out or forgotten about. And what also would happen is in this first month, I would debate the people in my life fervently. Like, I heard it said once as having the pathological person's serpent voice in your head. I was talking to him and debating with him in my head for like 2 months. Like, I would even, almost like out of a movie, I would even like knock on my head a few times and just be like, stop. So every single excuse or thing that he gave me to keep me down, I would argue with that voice. And it made me realize the more that I came out of the fog, it was becoming more and more apparent how I had these two things inside of me, and that some mind control had happened. I mean, he was living inside of me, and he was talking to me. I realized that before every thought I had, I was running it by what he would say or what he would cut me down with. So I must have been doing that the whole time. So what it took was, it was like blood coming back into a limb. It took time apart, as these debates would happen in my head with his voice and mine, his arguments started getting weaker and weaker. My cognition was coming back. I wasn't losing my keys anymore, which, you know, I later realized he was hiding from me, to disorient me.
I'm Donna Anderson, and this is True Love Fraud Stories. This is the conclusion of our story called Love and Losing My Mind. It's the story of the 2.5-year relationship between a woman whom we call Susanna and a man whom we call Luke. All names have been changed to protect the privacy of everyone involved. In part one, Susanna tells how she wasn't initially attracted to Luke, but slowly fell for him. In part two, Susanna describes her struggle to trust Luke, only to learn that she was right to doubt him all along. In this episode, Susanna explains who, or perhaps what, she believes Luke really is, and how she approached her recovery.
And I'm excited to talk about this. So I'd said before, my two favorite topics my whole life have been psychological thrillers and cults. I've been fascinated. I've seen every cult documentary. I've seen every psychological thriller. My God, I never thought I'd be living it. And that's the best way to describe it. What happened when he left was coming out of a cult and literally living in a psychological thriller, in the sense that things were happening in my body and my mind that I did not even have the neural pathways for. You know, I immediately, I don't know if it's from being in recovery or just how I am, I don't know how to stay down. Like, I don't know how to stay still. I'm someone that if I'm depressed, I am outside. I've got to keep moving. And I'm an external processor. So I call all my support. I call my mom. I call my closest friends. I call my aunts, call my brother. And all I could tell them was, I said, just tell everyone, you know, we broke up, please. Just tell everybody. I knew something massive, of a massive proportion of injustice had happened, but I didn't have the evidence. You know, I couldn't believe it. These impossible things to describe, like these things that were impossible to describe because they were impossible to see, but they were just felt. Like, imagine being, I was the only person who can fight for yourself. For the first time, nobody can help me. Nobody even has an inkling of where to lead me. It's like you must rely on the mass of confusion and weight you feel to be translated somehow. You know, I'm not backing down if somebody says it's not a big deal, which nobody said it wasn't. But, and I, it's like, it was just even more maddening because I realized the difficulty in communicating it each time more and more. My mind was warped and stuffy. But then this thought came over me. One day I was like, you know what? Only one person has ever treated me this way ever in my now 28 years of life. Only one person has ever said these horrible things about me. And I was like, you know, Susanna, why are you just all of a sudden having panic attacks for the first time in your life in a small sliver of time and nine of them, you know? So I didn't have my voice yet, but at that point, the weight of knowing I had to be my only advocate required more mental strength and energy than I don't think I'd ever been in a position to realize that I had. I just had this feeling of, what was that? And I had this feeling of, he's counting on me to stay down and not think about it. But how could somebody not think about it?
Susanna had experienced rough times in her life, but she'd never felt a trauma like this. It was so big and so far-reaching that she didn't have a choice about how she processed it.
I was fluctuating between immense sorrow and immense rage, Donna. I mean, like, I didn't know my body was capable of producing this much anger. I mean, it came to the point that I was afraid for my health. And when I was in an anger fluctuation, I would beg and pray for the sadness one to come back so I could get relief. And when the sadness one got real bad, I would beg and pray for the anger one to come back. It was extremes. I would never, ever have the words, you know, I know what heroin withdrawals feel like. And I will say that this felt like heroin withdrawals times 1,000. I was crawling out of my skin. I couldn't stay still. I had no idea what to do. Nobody knew how to help me. I knew that this was massive. Like, I just can't stress enough. I mean, the rage. And so at first, all I could process was the actual betrayal. You know, I was having nightmares about them having sex. I was having graphic visuals, even though I didn't see it, of them having sex. I would wake up vomiting, thinking about them having sex and being all sweaty and laughing about me and laughing about me being scared and hurt. I mean, the rage and the sorrow and the I didn't consent to this. I didn't consent to any of this, you know? And here I am having to deal with it.
Three weeks after the breakup, Susanna's car was giving her problems. She needed a new one, so she went to a car dealership with her mother and brother. While there, Susanna received a phone call from one of the young women whom she sponsors in recovery. The woman told her shocking news. Luke had gone to New York with one of her friends.
He was spending a weekend trip with a girl that was younger than me, looked very naive, was in recovery. She had just gotten out of a relationship and had just moved apartments, just like me. And they were in New York together. I literally died at that car dealership. That's the best way I could put it. I could go on and on about how awful that was, but I did. But then that was about to be my saving grace because of this. The fact that he did that when he did saved my life, because this moment of clarity came over me where all the emotion went away. And it was almost like I had this objective outsider looking down on it. And I go, wait a second. That's objectively weird, you know? Like, say if you had even fallen out of love with someone for this time, any normal person would either not feel the desire to do something like that, or they will have known, you know, I just screwed up this very serious relationship. I've got no business being or doing anything with anyone other than some soul searching, you know? And so again, it was like the emotion was taken out of it and I was able to see it objectively.
Susanna started thinking about Luke's relationship history, particularly the woman he dated before her, Jessica. He had told her that Jessica became so anxiously attached to him that she stopped doing what attracted him to her in the first place. Susanna realized that she had behaved in exactly the same way. That's when Susanna knew that she and Jessica needed to talk. She reached out to her on social media.
Jessica messages me back. She says, absolutely, let's get together. We meet up in person. We couldn't believe the first thing that we related on was Jessica was like, would he ever go icy cold silent on you with the black eyes? And I grasped my chest and it was like the wind just left me. I said, oh my God, I never even knew it was a possibility to be said that out loud by somebody else. Are you serious? He did that with you too? And she was like, yes. She was like, I used to just roll over in the bed and face the wall and try and muffle my tears. I said, oh my God, I did that. It was insane. And so Jessica and I became very close. I got very lucky. We're the same age. Jessica is brilliant, funny. So we get along on an actual person level. It's not like on just this. So Jessica shared me some stuff about her experience. She shared that at one time after her and Luke broke up, she told Luke, you know, I know you still have my Tupperware, but please don't bring it by my house or anything. And he was like, all right, cool. She was like, I need space. And that then Jessica comes home the next day and the Tupperware is placed outside of her door. Then I thought back to how after Luke moved out, you know, he was coming by for a couple weeks while I was at work to get in the mail. And I'd left him a note outside once that said, hey, when you bring the cat stuff back, please leave it on the porch. Don't come inside the apartment. When I come back home later that day, there was the cat stuff placed inside the apartment on the steps. And that shifted everything for me.
Who does this? Who so callously violates direct requests from their former partner? What was wrong with him? Susanna searched the internet for explanations.
There's this thing called alexithymia. It's where people don't feel emotions correctly or something. Okay, he has that. But then I would look at the bigger picture and more symptoms and I'd be like, no, that's not him. And then I started reading about narcissism, but anytime I saw something online about that, it was describing things that were not him. After all, my therapist the entire 2 years would be like, well, we know he's not a sociopath because then I started seeing a description of a covert narcissist, which made a lot more sense. Brooding, moody, everything about Luke, it fit, right?
Susanna then came across information about psychopathy. She found Dr. Robert Hare's Psychopathy Checklist Revised, a well-known instrument that measures an individual's level of disturbance. She looked at the list of psychopathic traits and behaviors, and Luke had almost all of them.
The narcissism description fell short, or the sociopath almost felt a little short. None of it felt short with the psychopathy. And another thing that made me think that is that as I was telling some people about this, they go, "Ooh, that sounds like Satan. Like that's like how Lucifer is described in the Bible. I didn't really know what the concept of sadism meant. I thought it was just something with Satan. I didn't know that the definition was as simple as a person who derives pleasure from causing harm to others. And the more I would talk about this, the more I'd be hearing it out loud for the first time. And I would just be like, oh my God, that's insane. Why would anybody do that?
Susanna was beginning to understand that there was something seriously wrong with Luke.
Here's the moment that changed it all. I was standing in my apartment. It was probably about 2 a.m. And all of a sudden, something came into mind. I think it started with the wetting the bed. I had been reading all this stuff about covert narcissism, psychopathy, sociopathy. I had found your site, Donna. Everything was making sense for once. And then it hit me. The memory of the urine in the spray bottle. I said, wait a second. No. No normal kid does that. That's crazy. And then I literally thought about this and I just said, Jesus Christ, out loud. It hit me. Bedwetting past the age of 8. Now, I had always heard that that was a stereotypical trope with serial killers. You know what I mean? And so taken individually, something like that wouldn't be a big deal. But I made the connection about the urine, the wetting the bed, and then like a stack of cards, it was like all these memories flashed into my brain. I mean, everything that I always missed. I could go on and on and on, but I won't about that. It was the most profound moment I've had in my entire life. I clutched my chest, and it's not like I even felt, I was in awe. I felt a slight little inkling of relief in that, oh my God, this war in my head, I finally got answers. But I got this bone chilling. Again, I did not have the neural pathways for this. It sunk in. I said, oh my God, am I the only person that knows this secret? He's a psychopath.
Then Susanna remembered reading that there was a strong genetic link to psychopathy, and she remembered what she had heard about Luke's biological father.
And I was very still, and then I thought to myself, oh my God, he still has his copy of the key. And now granted, it is very hard to wrap your mind around the fact that somebody you were this close to and slept with and cried and laughed with is this thing that you're used to just seeing in movies. I mean, it was mind-blowing. My brain didn't know how to think of it, but all this stuff hit me. I said, oh my God, am I the only person that knows? Then I thought, oh my God, his friends, the good ones, they're all being duped by him. He's this rogue agent running around, and oh my God, I know his secret. And I said, I got to get my key back. I went around and I just on all fours went and made sure that all of my windows were locked.
The next day, Susanna called Jessica and told her that she believed Luke was a psychopath.
And I realized in that moment that it was all a mask. It felt like having this empty skin laying on the floor in our apartment, like a snake had shed it on the way out. I said, oh my God, the person I'm missing, the person I'm loving doesn't exist. You know, I almost even felt an anger at the disrespect it was to just leave me with that to like toss out in the trash, you know? And I loved what I thought that mask was down to the little girl in me. It was as disrespectful as it felt. It felt like I was being stranded, sitting in this land of our world alone with wind blowing and all these boxes of heavy, multi-textured memories dumped at my feet. It's like he just left it like trash for me to deal with.
Susanna had to get her key back, but she didn't want to call Luke. Instead, she called his friend and sponsor, Tim, and asked him to help. Tim said he could get the key back. They planned to meet up.
I was so traumatized. I mean, my heart was like pounding, and I had this decision. I was like, okay, he either is a good guy that's being duped by Luke too, or he's the same thing as Luke. But here's the thing. I was only just wrapping my head around the fact that something like Luke existed. So I was more willing to bet that Tim was not one, because how could that be? And so I go to meet Tim, and I had this thing. I was reading everything online, you know, with flying monkeys of like, oh, don't try and call the person out or anything. And I'm like, oh, you know, I'm better than that. So I said to Tim, I said, hey, Tim, I just want you to know something. You either know everything, which means you're like out of a movie, some treacherous twin with him, or you know nothing at all. I said, I want you to know that I don't want you to waste your time. I think he might be conning you. And my God, this would be the last time that I was messed with like this. Tim turned and faced me, and there were those black eyes that I had only seen in Luke, and he had a quick smirk on his face. He said, hey, you're out of it now, aren't you? I said, Tim, and I felt myself going nonverbal. I now know that it's the trauma response, but I was starting to lose my vision a little bit, and I couldn't get words out. I said, I woke up wanting to die for 2 years. And he looked at me. He said, hey, I don't sponsor perfect men. I said, no, you don't understand. I was stuttering. I didn't know what to say. He said, let it go. Let it go, Susanna. You're out of it.
Susanna lost it. She walked away, got into her car, and immediately called Jessica.
Jessica answers, and before I even got, I just said, Jessica, oh my God, and Jessica goes, just scream as loud as you can. So I just screamed and screamed and screamed on the phone with her, and I was like, there is no way he wins every single time. There is no beating this. Like, he is just this oppressive force, you know? I look at me having to even scramble to get in a defensive position. Like, I'm still not even able to process what the heck just happened, and then now you're telling me that I've got somebody trying to actively work against me. I mean, I couldn't wrap my head around it. And Jessica said something I'll never forget. She goes, I told her, I said, he wins every time. I will never, ever be able to climb out of this or to like prove her justice. And she goes, well, here's the thing. You're not alone this time. You're not alone in it this time. And that changed everything for me, because that same helplessness came over of just being suffocated. So, you know, I had to deal with that with the first time in my life. It's like, you know, It was as clear as day to me what an injustice and a crime against humanity had happened to me. But it was like those videos where people pretend like someone's invisible and they freak the person out.
Susanna realized that she had suffered a terrible injury, but it was invisible.
Nobody could see it. Nobody could see it, but I needed to get it out of me. You know, my mind had been tampered with, my innocence, my youth, my soul, my time, my love, and my brain was taken from me during this time period, you know. And that made me angry, angry. How dare you? How dare you poke and prod and play with me like a dead squirrel on the road? You know what I mean? I mean, the rage. It wasn't personal anymore in the sense of like, because the person who did this to me, who I thought did this to me, doesn't exist. So it's only personal against my humanity. It's not like, I don't even see him now as like having a gender. It's just this thing. And so I said, okay, all my mind's been tampered with. This trauma, I can't think my way out of it. It's going to happen. Cool. Well, I'm not just staying still. I'm going to use all this fight or flight that's in me to get this eradicated from me. And I'm determined.
Despite her determination, Susanna found that her brain could not figure out what she should do. She couldn't think her way out of this. She had to find another way. Susanna needed to put her body in the driver's seat.
I realized that anytime I made, like, say, an appointment with someone to catch them up with what happened, it would take hours and my brain would be so impaired. And even though my fight or flight said, you need to spring to action, you have got to fight for this. You have got to fight for your sanity. You got to blah, blah, blah. You got to all of this. My body was like, hey, we cannot do this. And so eventually, from not putting myself in these positions, I got a little bit more peace. I started living a gentle life. I needed to tell a lot of people at first because the cognitive dissonance hadn't been resolved. But the more I was sure and things had been thawed out, my body had us be totally okay with only having a couple people of support that we talked to and we about it, and we were able to keep it like that. And then my body told me to try and live as normal as possible of a life outside of this to help you with your individuation. That idea just came to me. So for me, I said, you know what? I'm going to purposefully choose to hang out with people that don't know about the abuse, because I want to see myself through their eyes. You know, I don't want this to define me.
Experts in human development describe the process of forming a stable personality, separate from parents and others, as individuation. After her involvement with Luke, Susanna had to rebuild herself, separating herself from the mind control that she had experienced.
There were times that, you know, when I was individuating, when it was thawing and his voice was becoming more separate and separate from mine and getting smaller, I realized that I was left with the shell of what I was prior to the mind control. So it was this out of body experience where I had to go back. I had to look at photos of me when I was younger. I had to go to my childhood home. I had to spend time with people that knew me before this relationship. I even went to my mom's house and I climbed up in the tree that I used to climb when I was a little girl. And I sat in there and I just closed my eyes and I just prayed. I said, come back, come back. Like, to me, if this is who you are. You were the girl that was watching late night with Conan O'Brien, with her dad and her brother. You were okay. You were good. You were sweet. You have been loved by everybody and you are somebody. And I had to do that. I had to see that the qualities in me that were targeted by him make me a perfect person for any other relationship. You know, if this hadn't happened, you know, I've like a phoenix from the ashes. And Donna, I want to read more of your story about your spiritual transformation, because that's what I'm in the midst of. And it does not make it worth it. That shouldn't have happened. I am equal parts a victim and a survivor. I get to call myself a victim because I was victimized and I wasn't allowed to view myself as that for a while. But yes, I survived too.
Susanna realized that talk therapy alone wasn't going to help her. She needed physical approaches. So she did yoga. With her mother, a psychotherapist, she also explored different modalities of EMDR therapy.
My body told me, it said, listen, you've realized that your brain cannot overpower this. You are very, very traumatized, and it is going to be a while. And so then I made the decision. I said, okay, I can't think my way out of this and just jump in to living like nothing happened. So if I've got all of this emotion still inside of me and this time on my hands, I'm not just going to stay idle. I am going to do and learn and expand everything possible I can to eradicate me from this. I will never get justice with him, but what I can do is get justice for myself and remove the tampering that's been done to me. That's the only thing I can do, and it's truly the most important thing to me. I started listening to my body. I make sure that I am being equal parts social, but equal parts taking time for myself. You know, I say a lot of no's so that I can say yeses in the future.
Exercise was a big part of Susanna's recovery program.
I joined all these different bike groups in my city, different genders, different ethnicities, different ages. I'm just riding with these new groups of people. I'm doing that. I'm doing everything. And, you know, one thing I was so proud of my body for was that I didn't close off and get distrustful and bitter. The opposite happened. My heart softened in a way that it hadn't before. It was like, you know, when you have a sleepover as a kid at a kid's house whose mom smokes cigarettes, and then you like come back to your home the next day and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm happy I'm not in that scary, weird place anymore. I'm happy to be home. It felt like that, like I was coming back home. I was able to take in the love from the people who knew me so much deeper than I ever did. I wasn't closed off. I was open, and I am not distrustful. Like I'm not in any place to get in another relationship. I don't want to, but I'm not worried about being distrustful because I don't know. Just those things didn't happen. I was just so proud. I was so proud and happy with myself that I softened in such a way.
Susanna's recovery was a long, intense process. One that is ongoing. Still, she has already made tremendous progress.
This December of 2023, will have been the year mark of me being out of it. I have made so much progress in this year, you know, and it is a slow thaw. If there's anything I could tell a new survivor that I wish I could have been told at the time, is that what you were feeling in the first couple of months are not going to be what you're feeling like forever. And also, don't make any really decisions those first couple of weeks or months, because I felt something different every day. I didn't understand the depth of this trauma and of his nature and his wickedness. So I made so many mistakes that set me up for further re-traumatization.
Susanna came to understand that there was a profound spiritual dimension to her experience. She had come face to face with evil.
It is spiritual. Like, I used to think that dogma and religion, all of that was hocus pocus, but this is on a spiritual level too. I mean, I've had to pray to God I've felt it creep in. You know, evil depicted in the media and movies is this tantalizing, cool, dark, interesting thing. But what it really feels like is something being so strange and so subhuman that it's perverted. That's what evil is. It's like a perversion against humanity. That's what it feels like. It's not complex. It's not this mysterious, cool thing. It's dark.
I'm Donna Anderson, and this is True Love Fraud Stories. In the next episode of this podcast, you'll hear from Jessica, the woman who also dated Luke, and it almost killed her. I also invite you to listen to expert commentary related to this story. I interview Dr. Leanne Leadham, a psychiatrist and expert on psychopathy. We talk about how abuse, trauma, and betrayal affect the brain. To listen to this show ad-free, please subscribe to True Love Fraud Stories. As a subscriber, you'll be invited to Love Fraud Live, my informal support group. I do a short presentation about sociopaths and narcissists, and then answer your questions.
You made a passing reference to the keys. Did you discover that he was indeed hiding your keys?
So here's the thing, and this is how a lot of my memories have to be in retrospect with this, is that I couldn't imagine he'd be doing that. Now, there is something to be said for the fact that my executive functioning was impaired, but I could never find my keys, right? And so there was one memory I had. We were about to go on a trip, and I was running around looking for various items. And I had a two-story apartment. And so I come downstairs, and I see him placing a pillow back on the couch, like he had just picked it up. And he said, "Oh, caught me." And I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I think I found your keys." And they were behind the pillow. And he was just messing with that pillow. And he turned around. He didn't jump. He never jumped. He didn't have a startle response. So I just had to go by his face, but that clicked with me. And it's like, you know, my executive functioning, my brain was still injured when he left. But as soon as he left, I didn't lose my keys anymore.
True Love Fraud Stories is produced by lovefraud.com. For more information about this story, other great stories, or if you'd like to share your story, visit podcasts.lovefraud.com. Engineering is by Terry Kelly. To learn how to recognize and recover from everyday sociopaths, visit lovefraud.com. You'll find articles, books, and webinars. You can also book an appointment with me, Donna Anderson, for a personal consultation.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say. Your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.